Ah, the sloop John B. As nostalgic a song as ever there was. Well, anyway, admitting you're nostalgic can be a little embarrassing. It's kind of like eating a whole pie yourself. Too sweet. Too indulgent. But Svetlana Boym, author of The Future of Nostalgia, says it wasn't always like this. She told Anne Strangechamps, nostalgia used to be considered a credit to the afflicted.
It was invented in 17th century by a Swiss doctor who was defending his doctoral thesis. And he claimed that the nostalgia is a disease of afflicted imagination, and it's very characteristic for Swiss mercenary soldiers or domestic help or students who were working or serving abroad. And he believed that it is an aggravated physical illness, but it's a curable disease, and it can be cured with opium leeches and returned back to Swiss Alps.
He thought it was actually a physical disease?
Yes, with specific symptoms, and he believed that return home will cure the condition of nostalgia.
Well, it might have, but what kinds of symptoms was he seeing in these soldiers who had nostalgia?
They would tend to faint, have high fever, indigestion, stomach problem, and sometimes it led to death. Apparently, they were sometimes confusing symptoms of nostalgia and symptoms of tuberculosis. The interesting thing happened in the end of 18th century, that they could no longer find a locus or a place of nostalgia. They were looking for something they called nostalgic bone, like now, you know, scientists are always looking for a gene that is responsible for everything. They were looking for nostalgic bone, and they couldn't find it, so they didn't know if the locus of nostalgia is in a person's brain or is it in the outside world? Because nostalgia is really a relationship between one's individual memory and one's homeland.
I'm surprised that soldiers would be willing to admit to being, I don't know, so weakened by a simple longing for their home that they'd fall ill. You'd think they'd think that was kind of, I don't know, unmanly.
It's an excellent question because, in fact, Swiss doctors thought that it's a patriotic disease. But, of course, it reveals all the problems of patriotism. You love your motherland so much that you don't wish to be away from it or, for that matter, to die for it. But in the Russian army in 18th century, there was an epidemic of nostalgia. So then the Russian general said that we're going to bury people alive if they continue complaining of nostalgia. And apparently he buried one soldier alive and the epidemic stopped.
Nobody would want to admit to it after that.
But Americans, if Swiss at least thought it's a disease of patriotism that shows some imagination, American doctors were particularly critical of nostalgia. And they claimed that Americans do not have nostalgia because it's a young nation and it doesn't suffer from the diseases of the old world. However, during the Civil War, during the American Civil War, American doctors also discovered symptoms of nostalgia and they described it as an unmanly and unprogressive disease.
You said that at first nostalgia could be cured by a return to the homeland, to a real home, but nostalgia has evolved to be, in our parlance today, in some ways, the idea of a longing for a home that doesn't exist or that may never have have existed. How did that happen?
Well, sometimes when the doctors would return patients home, their symptoms would get worse. So then they decided that philosophers and poets should take care of nostalgia, that it's not merely a medical condition. And they also discovered that in a way it was a disease of modernity, very much connected to the conception of progress and the idea of irreversible time. So that in a way nostalgia is not so much longing for place, but also longing for another time, which could be a time of one's childhood or some imaginary golden age. So then in the 19th century, nostalgia very closely connected to romantic nationalism, the idea of returning back to some kind of ideal national homeland. And I discovered that in various East European languages, for instance, there is a word for nostalgia that they claim to be untranslatable in Russian tuska, in Polish tisknota, and so on. But all of these words are actually synonyms.
You're an immigrant yourself. Have you yourself experienced nostalgia very much?
You know, when I immigrated, which was in 1981, I came to the United States actually as a political refugee from Soviet Union. I was born in Leningrad, USSR. Neither my city nor my country exists. But when I came to America, there was a certain taboo on nostalgia. You were not supposed to look back. And I discovered that first wave of immigrants often shares that. It's their children who dream of returning home. The immigrants were too busy to leave their home. And, you know, I was frequently asked the question, do you miss your homeland? And I would usually say, well, yes, but it's not what you mean, or no, but it's not what you mean. I think it was very difficult to translate the ambivalence that I felt, both about my former homeland and about my new homeland. Because I think we believe that nostalgia is also very dangerous, because it is linked to dangerous idealization of the past, that instead of history, you speak about heritage, and heritage is something you're not supposed to question. So I'm very aware of that dangerous dimension of what I would call restorative nostalgia that tries to restore the past as some kind of a golden age.
Can you explain that a bit more? What is dangerous about nostalgia? Mm-hmm.
What is dangerous about nostalgia is the uncritical view of the past. The past is sort of, you know, tinted in pink, and it's forever opposed to the present. But also, as I mentioned, historically, nostalgia was linked to romantic nationalism, which, of course, had many important aspects to it, but it was also linked to this idea of inventing traditions. Living traditions change. They, you know, they're flexible. Invented traditions, when you invent most traditional religious society or most traditional national community, you tend to invent tradition which becomes extremely rigid. And so nostalgia substitutes for critical reflection. And that kind of what I call restorative nostalgia can be dangerous.
To take us into the very present, would you say that Osama bin Laden's crusade against the U.S. is at least in part motivated by nostalgia?
Yes, I know it's a very polemical idea, but I see that sort of return to fundamentalism as a perfect example of this invention of tradition. I read that the founder of the Jihad in Egypt movement, and his name escapes me right now, was actually initially a modernist literary critic who went to America in the 1940s, spent some time there, and after, you know, especially was particularly disgusted by the way people danced in New York City. So returning home, he kind of created that sort of nostalgic vision of a perfect Islamic society that never was. I used to study medieval Spain, you know, and I know a lot about medieval Muslim culture that, of course, was nothing like what they're trying to recreate now. And in fact, in Spain, Jews and Muslims cohabited very peacefully, and there was a lot of cultural development. It was hardly that kind of orthodox and fanatic return to religion as we see now. So I really see that as a very modern phenomenon.
Is nostalgia continuing to evolve?
I think so. I'm not sure how, but I discovered, for instance, I believe that perhaps the discovery of the internet revolution, is the end of nostalgia. Mm. Because nostalgia is about irreversibility of time, right? That, you know, you cannot physically return to your childhood. But internet proposed a very different model, spatial model, you know, of hypertext. So I thought maybe on the internet everything is available, you know, you have a very different model of memory. Maybe it's the end of nostalgia. But then I opened once a cyberpunk page, and it was all dedicated to nostalgia. It said something that cyberpunks are not what they used to be.
So even on the internet, you can't go home again.
You can't. And even now there is a nostalgia for the idea of cyberspace as opposed to e-world. E-world being commercialized cyberspace, and cyberspace being a sort of an image of, you know, kind of autonomous free zone, free space, utopian free space. So, yes, you can't even go back to the virtual home.
Svetlana Boym spoke with Anne Strainchamps about her book, The Future of Nostalgia.